on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, Shay here, On Air Indie. Welcome and enjoy episode 41. First music history trivia for May 3rd. This day in 1952, Kitty Wells recorded It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels. Disenchanted with her career prospects and considering retirement, Kitty agreed to the session at Owen Bradley's studio because of the 125 Union Scale recording payment. It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels became the first number one Billboard country hit for a solo female artist. Boston rock band The Freight are on the show today. The band's sound is a mix of rock and roll, blues rock, soul, and jam with a modern rock edge. You are going to love this band. Frontman Alan Turow, bassist Steven Anderson, and drummer Mark Loverin join us. Welcome, Adam, Steven, and Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. It's great that all the band got to, three members of the band got together today. Thank you very much for doing that. Now, with the busy life, it doesn't always happen.
We're grateful to be here.
Yeah. Well, you guys have been kicking ass since your debut single, Show Me, in August 2020, number one of iTunes Blue Chart.
Yeah, it was pretty mind blowing, and the debut single we had that we really didn't have grand plans to release a single, but COVID forced us into it kind of, which was a good thing, and it blew our minds. Yeah, hit number one. It was a pretty incredible feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, Adam gave us updates throughout the morning, and it was pretty awesome to see it climb. It was great. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about that. What did it feel like?
So, it was really like unimaginable because, I didn't even, it's not even something that registers, our first single. I was as an independent artist, there's so many things to do, to building up to a releasing of a song that, you don't even realize until you actually just do it. And so that was my first go at doing it. And, get all the ducks in a row, you release the song, you hope there's a positive response from the people that are following you and into your music. And one of my friends actually texted me who was looking at the iTunes charts. He texted me like early in the morning. He's like, dude, check out the iTunes blues charts. He goes, your song is number, like, I think it, when I woke up, it was like number, I don't know, like 8 or something like that.
That's really incredible, the success you had on the charts. I'm really impressed. So, Adam, you're the front man for the band. I'd like to know a bit more about you and the other members. Can you tell us first your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started playing guitar and singing probably around when I was like, I want to say 10 or 11 years old. And then sort of started taking it more seriously around like 13. And then, really got into the Beatles, and the Beatles really launched me into like my whole, love of music, like real deep love of music, and taking it more seriously and trying to keep getting better as a musician and thinking about music in that way. And then, I went on to Berklee College of Music for college, and then started playing in bands and doing, got into the blues. And there's a really cool blues scene in Boston around where we are. And I got to go to some great, there was some like really legendary, like open mics, jam sessions around Quincy and Boston around that time. And I got to do some of those that really helped me, like, really shaped me as a player. And I just moved on from there and kept going through bands and taking things more seriously and writing more. And now we got the Freight going, and I couldn't be more thrilled with how things are going.
Yeah, you guys you formed a really good band, Adam.
Thank you so much.
An incredible band. You're one of my favorites. and the Paul McCartney influence is definitely in your music.
Oh, yeah. That means a lot that you can hear it.
Yeah, that's great. So I'd like to hear from Mark next. So, Mark, how did you get into drums?
Yeah, so I the first time I heard the drums, I was about 4 years old walking down the street, and a neighborhood friend, I wasn't a friend, my brother's friend, I think, was playing the drums, and I heard it from the street. And I just stopped in my tracks. I remember clear as day. And I stood there for about half an hour listening, and I just had the beat in my head. I could not shake it. And I went home and I just begged my parents to play the drums, begged them. And I was about four. And they bought me like a little cheap snare drum, and I smashed it the first day and broke it. And then eventually, like when I was in first grade, I bought my first drum set, an old Slingerland set I found at a yard sale for like $100 with my yard sale money. And I just started banging on that. I did break that one, luckily, and kept playing. Never stopped.
And what kind of drum set do you play on now?
I have a DW, little jazz series kit. I love it. It's a little four-piece. It rocks, though. It's my favorite.
I can tell.
I got it a couple years ago. It was like my dream set. I finally got it a couple years ago. I've been building up to it for a long time, and then I finally did it, and it suits me so well. It just fits perfect.
That's awesome. The listeners don't know, but I can see his face on video, and you can see him light up. It's amazing.
That's the happiest
part. It's amazing. And what about you, Stephen? What's your background?
Yeah, so I grew up with music around me. My family is pretty musical, and I picked up the guitar around, I think, about 13, 14 years old, and you know, I haven't put it down. I play bass now. I've been playing in various cover bands for about 20 years. And we started The Frayed about 2+ years ago. And doing the original music is much more fulfilling as a musician. And we're just having a really great time with it.
So what made you gravitate towards the bass from guitar?
Honestly, it was work. You get more work being a bass player, I found.
Well, and I would say that.
It's hard to break in as a guitar player because there's just so many great guitar players. And I wasn't a great guitar player. So I can be a mediocre bassist and I can get away with it.
You're good on bass.
You're a great bass player. No, it suits you.
To be honest with you, the percussion part of the band, the drums and the bass are my favorite part of the band.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, mine too. Yeah, great.
I was like you. I saw my cousin, Mark, he had a drum set and Jimmy was just going ape, you know, and the thing. And I desperately wanted a drum set, but it didn't go over with my upbringing. So I never got that.
My mom was very patient with it. I don't know how she did. I mean, I remember being frustrated and coming downstairs and throwing my sticks and being like, I stink. And she's like, Mark, go back upstairs and keep playing. And I would have been like, stop playing, please. But she encouraged me to keep going. And I love it. And I just loved it. I love the physicality of it. I've never really wanted to play a different instrument.
So are all of you from Boston area? Like, how did you actually hook up and meet?
So, yeah, I grew up in Quincy, and actually the two other guys who aren't here in the band, John, who plays percussion, John Marinelli, and Greg Tregellis, who plays keys and does some backup singing, they're actually from Quincy too. And yeah, so Quincy's just south of Boston, like just south of Boston. And then these guys are all from the South Shore area too. So the South Shore area is just like from Boston basically down to the Cape, to Cape Cod.
Yeah.
And there's a really great music community in the South Shore of Boston. And it's like a very close-knit community. Everyone sort of knows each other. Everyone's like at gigs around and supportive of each other. And there's a Facebook group I was on that when I was starting the band, and I just put a note out there saying, hey, you know, I got some songs, looking to put a rock and roll band together. If anyone's interested, you know, hit me up. And Mark was the first one to reach out. And then we just kind of went from there.
Well, you definitely put together a great band.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, these guys are awesome. Yeah.
No, I love you. I absolutely, I'm being serious. I the first time I heard your music, I was like, I'm down. I'm down. You remind me, I was surprised. The original reviews I was reading, you were saying you were influenced by Police and Zeppelin and the Beatles, Stones. And I kept hearing Journey and Aerosmith.
That's awesome.
Right? I mean, and amazing. Just today, because I went down the rabbit hole and reading every review, and I'm going, and one of the reviews stated Aerosmith. I go, that's why, yeah. You know, because they are my all-time favorite band ever.
Yeah,
and I listened again to a couple of your tracks, and I'm like, yeah, I hear Journey, I hear Aerosmith. So, but you're completely different. But I'm saying you can tell you draw a lot of the influence from that, and. It's great.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for saying that. I mean, yeah, Aerosmith and Journey. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome. I live, eat, and breathe music.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Anyways, can we talk about Fish on a Bike? Because that's up next.
Absolutely. So Fish on a Bike, it came about that was an early one I wrote. That was like a really kind of, just a sort of bluesy progression that I had in my brain, sort of just the way I played it, just got a, you know, that funky little guitar riff going on there, and I kind of heard a little bit of a Beatlesy thing in there, so we added in some sort of, you know, harmonies, and Greg plays a killer solo, and just as far as like writing the song, I wrote it in kind of a funny way, actually. I was trying to think about like analogies and like ways to say things without like directly saying it. And so I Googled ways, I think it was like ways to say like what's wrong with you or something, or like what's the matter or something like that. And it just kept coming up with like animal references. And so like one of them was like, I need you, like a fish needs a bike. And one of them was, there's a bee in your bonnet. That's one of the lyrics. And then one of them was, what's the other one I use? Gosh, you'd think I wrote the song. You think I'd remember. The other one is just fishing a bike was the other one. So there's those three really. And then, that's how I actually just sort of Googled that thought. You know what I mean? The sort of analogy thought of what I was thinking about. Like, you know, and it just kind of like, I just put it together in a blues form with that riff, it's just a catchy little rock tune, you know.
I remember the day you sent that to me. Still, like, because the way we write a lot is Adam will come up with an idea for a song, and he just does a rough acoustic thing on his iPhone, sends it out to everybody. We listen to it, kind of figure out what our parts would be, and then we kind of come together. And I remember I was in Harvard Square. I was going to see the Elevators, who were another South Shore band. They're playing the Sinclair that night. And I got that riff when I was at the hotel, and I was like, wow, this is a great song. And I immediately heard the rhythm section and the drums for that one in my head. And we got together. I couldn't wait to get back together to kind of work it out.
And it's about getting out of a relationship that's going too fast?
Yeah, I think so. And
You wrote it, Adam.
I did write it. And I think it's about like, you know, something that's going like, you know, getting a little amped up, you just want to bring it back down a little bit. You know what I mean? That's the point that it's at. And it's either like we can bring it back down and be chill, or we can just call it a day because I need you like a fish needs a bike.
Okay. I have a few brothers, so I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. So we're going to hear Fish on a Bike next.
Girl, won't you tell me why?
Well, definitely an outstanding track. It's great. Mark was talking about the creative process for that song. Is that the type of creative process you use all the time? Because the reason I'm asking that is the next track we're going to talk about and hear is Try Me On. And it was co-written with Adam and Stephen. Did that have a different process than the others?
Yeah, that had a different process. Stephen, it sort of initiated with Stephen sending me the music. So I'll let Stephen take up how he started that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was just a song idea I had for a while. And I recorded it, sent it to Adam. And it has the cool Zeppelin feel. Like, that's definitely one of our biggest influences. And this song makes that pretty obvious. So Adam took it. He actually had put Zeppelin-esque lyrics with just like lustful singing about a girl. And so the whole thing just came together like that. And we're really happy with it.
Yeah, it was cool. He sent me the parts. There's a few distinct parts actually. I thought they were awesome. I just kind of arranged them. And there's a bit of a story when I wrote it. I won't go into full.
How do you tell that?
Well, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's totally fine. It is what it is. But it's so anyway. So I was hanging out. My wife and the kids were away at her family. So I was home alone for the weekend. Just chilling on the couch. I love golf. I stink at it, but I love golf. And so I was watching golf, and the LPGA was on, and there was the girl who was leading the tournament was an amazing golfer, but she was also gorgeous. and so the camera was following her wherever she went. It just, the song kind of wrote itself. I wish I could remember the golfer's name. I can give credit, but
we call the song Try Me On, and with LPGA in parentheses as a joke.
Yeah.
Between us.
But the song's about lust.
I mean, Steven,
and you're talking on public airway about this.
I don't think
who knows, man.
Steven used the word lust. I never used the word lust. Steven went there. Yeah, I just let it come out. I don't. But yeah, I got. Yeah, I mean.
Well, it's a really good track. It's a really good track. I was only teasing.
Yeah.
I was only teasing.
It's all good. My wife knows the story, so we're good.
She's probably really laid back.
Yeah, she's good. She's cool.
Yeah. So, tell me what brought you to do an acoustic video of the song.
I feel like with the acoustic video, I like to do an acoustic, like if I can do an acoustic version of all our songs, I feel like that can help make me connect to the song too, like have it be a stripped down thing. You know what I mean? Like if I can hear it acoustically with just me and a guitar, that's, I think that's a good sign for me to know that, like, I think the song is working.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like seeing the stripped down acoustic, and it did showcase your vocals very well.
Oh, thank you.
You did very well.
Thank you.
So we're going to listen to Try Me On.
Oh, yeah.
So I noticed, they seem to be a pattern with you guys. You had producer Jeff Rosen and Ted Jensen involved with all three of your songs. Can you talk about that? I believe they're part of the Soundcheck Studios that is in Boston.
Yes. So, right near us on the South Shore, there's this really awesome place that opened up over the last couple of years called Soundcheck Studios. And we've been there really since the beginning when they first opened up. They are really a kind of really inclusive place for musicians around the area. They have like rehearsal rooms that you can rent like monthly. So there's lots of bands around. All the musicians are there. It's a great community. And our friend Jeff Rosen, who is an incredible South Shore musician in his own right, when COVID hit, he had always done some producing stuff, but like when COVID hit, he really made the commitment to build a studio and start doing things in amazing ways. And so he's a friend of ours. So it was kind of like a natural fit to start working with him. Not to mention it's like basically in our hometown, you know what I mean? So it's very close to us and it just was wins all around. Jeff is like, we've had some amazing nights making music in his studio. It's just a blast. He's really become an extension of the band because, he gets us musically. We trust him. He trusts us. It's very collaborative. And his studio is just an amazing environment. And he's a talented guy. Yeah, he's been great. And then with Ted Jensen and the mastering, Ted Jensen is a literal legend in mastering. Like, he's done... You name it, I bet he's worked with them. Like, you're talking like he did Hotel California. He did, he's done Billy Joel, Green Day, The Police.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an unbelievable list. So, when you look up mastering, it's, it wasn't hard to make the choice to go with him. And his work is just like, it's amazing. When we get a master back from him, it's like, it's really great. It's a great feeling.
And how did you happen upon Ted?
Honestly, searching. I was seeking out mastering engineers that were reputable with samples of work that I knew about, and he was really top of the list, to be honest. And then once I saw how extensive his resume is and how much I love his work, clearly and the things that I listen to and love, it was kind of like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised when I saw his name on credits.
Yeah, you and me both. It's kind of wild. And it's funny, like he's a great guy. He he shared shares our music on Instagram when it gets released on his Instagram, which is like, I don't know, to me it's a pretty big deal. Like someone like that, it's one thing to work on it, but he even like was kind enough to share it on his. Sterling Sound, and with him, it was pretty great.
That's awesome of him.
Definitely.
So before we talk and listen to the next track, which is Kicking Ass, I want you guys to talk about your upcoming shows that you have. You have one at the Back Nine on April 3rd, or you did have one on April 3rd. And you have another one, and you have three books so far.
Yes, we do.
Can you talk about those events and the venues and how you organize it and all that?
Yeah, where we are starting to slowly open back up, and we have an awesome gig. This place, the Back Nine Lounge, is a newer spot, and they started hosting bands, and we're making our debut there. This will be our first gig. Since COVID or whatever, and we're just over the moon about it. Rehearsal been going great. And then we're playing a boxing event. Actually, there's like a fight event up in New Hampshire that we're providing the entertainment for that event. That's going to be really cool. That's up in Derry, New Hampshire. And then that's in mid-April. And then we are doing Soundcheck Studios, that place I was telling you about. They are like... They're building a gigantic stage inside. It's going to be a killer venue. They're going to get some really amazing, amazing bands coming through in the inside when that's ready. They're building it now. In the meantime, they do outdoor concerts. They have a huge lot, and it's really like festival style. Everyone sits outside, has a great time, and it's fantastic. You know, I mean, the tables are, you know, separate and all that thing. It's all safe and everything like that. But like, it's just an amazing atmosphere. The stage is big. It's just a great atmosphere. So that's coming up, and we're really excited about that one too.
Great sound mixing there too. The amazing.
Total pros. Good. Yeah. Very, very awesome there.
That's actually quite amazing and uplifting that a professional in the industry would take what happened with COVID and completely do a mind shift and do what he's doing.
Totally.
I'm very impressed with him as a professional.
So yeah, the people at Soundcheck, they're amazing. They're top notch. The Hermans are the dudes that own it. They're just amazing. They started doing shows in the last fall, even when COVID was going on. You know, they were all socially distant, all everything. They set up tables apart and everything like that. They had the space for it outside. Mm-hmm. And they just did everything the right way. And they were like, they kept the community going. You know, it stopped once it got too cold, obviously. But now that it's starting to warm back up, the shows are picking back up, the outdoor shows. And it's they're doing amazing work. And in Soundcheck Studios in Pembroke, Mass, everyone should check them out. They're pretty awesome. You can find them everywhere on Facebook and Instagram and stuff. They're an incredible place.
Well, I like to check out places like that. Yeah. And they are on my bucket list. And I love Boston. Awesome. I used to spend summers in Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's on my to-do list, definitely. So we're going to talk about Found. When I first heard it, I'll be honest with you. Like, I listen to the music before I read anything about it. I honestly thought it was a song about friends with benefits.
It could be. Well, that's kind of, it totally could be.
That's why I'm going, wow, this is pretty cool. Yeah, totally. And then, okay, good. I'm glad it wasn't off the mark.
Yeah. No, actually, you're closer to the mark than you think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then there was a girl leading you on that won't stick around.
Yeah.
So did that come from your personal experience?
I mean, it came from personal experience.
So many times.
So many times. Every time. Except my wife. She's the only one. In all honesty, a little bit, you know, from my past, I kind of do that. I have some of the songs I write, you know, like scenarios in my brain that like our personal experience, or maybe like that I wanted to go differently or that went differently, or like I create a scenario. And I think there's a little bit of that in this song where I like created some stuff as well as drew from some like personal stuff in my past, but also like elaborate on it, you know, and just let the story happen. I try not to filter anything, you know, when I write.
No, you definitely don't filter. But, you know, but what I love about your song, and even the one that you co-wrote with Stephen, is they're very universal, even though they seem to be very personal.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I love music. I think, you know, that's what I think rock and roll can be. You know, I feel like rock and roll is relatable. I try to have relatable songs. I try to write relatable songs. You know, I mean, I write them, obviously, you know, they come from me, but it's not just personal. Like, I love that people are digging the music and want to hear it and it's enjoyable. You know, that makes me happy too. I like, you know, that's cool.
Well, it's definitely 80s style rock.
Yes.
It's fourth overall single and your second of this year.
Yep.
So and it came out in March. The reviews have been outstanding.
I have to say, this has been the reviews for Found. I text Mark and Steven and John and I and Greg, we text all the time, and I was telling them I'm having trouble keeping up with the some of the press and the reviews and the, you know, promote, like the playlist ads and all the good things I'm hearing. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It's just like, I never would have dreamed it. You know, it's pretty wild.
And how's it doing on the charts?
You know, so the rock charts are different. The Show Me and Fish and a Bike were the blues charts. Blues charts are a little more user friendly. You can access the blues charts, you know, which is great. You can
get to them.
But the rock charts are like, It's amazing. The rock charts, you go, like, I think it goes up to the top 200, the ones that I looked in iTunes, and it's all legacy artists, you know, and it's all like, you know, you're talking all the most famous songs in the world that, you know, people are downloading every day. So I don't even know that we cracked the top, you know,
okay. 200,
but as far as like,
but we're getting there, we're building.
We're getting there. But as far as the, it's not, you know, it is what it is. It doesn't bother me at all. It's great because it's just to have music out there that people are digging is all I care about. But it is cool to see, like, it's been like, you know, Spotify is what it is, but it does get your music out to a lot of people. And I love that about Spotify. And yeah, it's gotten, you know, it's been streamed like 2,000 times in the first 2 weeks, which is by far the most streams we've had of a song in the first 2 weeks, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So something doesn't sound right to me. So the blues charts are more user-friendly and more indie artists friendly than the rock charts?
I think maybe I'm saying that wrong. I think it's a popularity thing. I mean, would you guys say it differently? You know, I mean, like,
yeah, it's definitely a niche market. That
right. So Adam's going to write a lot more blues songs going forward.
I'm just wondering the process, that's all.
Yeah, it's just a different animal. Every genre's, you know, can be so niche, but rock, it's like rock and pop, you know, those are the two monsters in country, really. Rock, pop, and country are like the big, you know, those are the big players that, like, you know, you get in those charts, then you're really, you know, there's something happening if you're in those charts.
Yeah. So do you think that there should be pressure on these people that do the playlist to separate independent music with that of labels?
That's a great question. It's a great question. I think this, you know, it's a whole larger thing of the state of music now. But as an independent artist, there's so much work to do. To keep it separate from a big label thing, I that's a great question. I don't know if I'm the one to answer that, but it's a great question.
Well, given the fact that the payout to the artist is based on the charts of the streams, wouldn't it be fair to the indie artist to have something separate that's devoted to people that are unsigned?
That would be awesome.
That's my take.
I think that's a great take.
That's great.
That's a great take. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Mm. So we're gonna listen to Found right now.
Be found.
another great track. You guys are really can look forward to a really strong presence in whatever space you decide to stay in, rock or blues. You're putting out great music.
Thank you so much.
So I already know the dream collaboration that Adam would Paul McCartney and Warren Hayes from the Allman Brothers, which I want to know why. It seems those two are completely diverse. Yeah. And what are your other two Steve and Mark's dream collaboration?
So you want me to take the why part first or with those ones? I guess I will. So, for me, like you said, that was from another interview I did where they asked me, you know, dream collaborations.
It's one of the questions I asked every once in a while. Yeah. I can see Paul McCartney based on your music. Yeah. Warren Hayes. He's outstanding. Yeah. Okay. Outstanding artist. But I thought, Allman Brothers. So sort of all of a sudden, like you have a chocolate cake and all of a sudden you find vanilla in the middle. I'm kind of going, where did that come from?
It's, you know, the Beatles to me led to the blues and the blues, of course, led me to the Allman Brothers. And I love the Allman Brothers and I love Warren Haynes. I mean, him to me is like his voice, his guitar playing, his, you know, the way he manages his band as far as like the stage presence, the songs he picks, the live performance. I love Warren Haynes. His producing, everything. I'm a big Warren Haynes fan.
Mm-hmm. Would you find you put out better music collaborating with him than Paul McCartney?
That's a great question. I don't know. I'd have to think. I guess Paul McCartney would be the only guy I would pick over Warren Haynes. I'll say that.
Okay. Just the way you talk about Warren, I would think he'd be the one you would choose first.
Yeah.
And what about you, Stephen?
Yeah, that's a great question. Living or Dead, I don't know. I'd love to jam with John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, me on bass, him on drums. That would be pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Or backing up Eddie Van Halen would have been incredible. Making music with him must be phenomenal. So, you know, any of the greats, living or dead, would just be amazing as a musician.
That's cool. You, Mark?
Actually, when you first asked the question, I went in kind of a funny direction. And I would love to work with like RJD2, who is a electronic artist. He's a DJ. Because he mixes in a lot of like live drum tracks into his music, and I just love that, like DJ Shadow or one of those electronic artists that use live drum tracks in their mixes. It would be really fun to lay down some tracks for something like that.
That's really cool. And where does he work out of?
Oh, RJD2. He's from Oregon, from Portland, Oregon, I believe. He's done some stuff, like he did the Mad Men theme. That's his most famous, you know, piece. But like he's got a lot of other. Multiple albums of music. And I've seen him live a few times. He puts on an amazing show.
Yeah, I'll look that up. So what is in the future for you guys? I know that you aim to put out more singles this year.
Yeah, we're working hard. We're just about buttoning up our next one. Hopefully we'll have that up before too long. And we're going to keep doing the singles thing this year, and then we're going to see where we stand at the end of the year as far as like what we want to do. If we, you know, we have material to do a record too. We're just sort of weighing our options and seeing what's working best for us to build our audience. And we want to get out there and play some cool shows. And we want to, you know, we're working on some regional gigs, some more gigs around New England where we are. We'd love to get out there to some new places and see some new faces and meet some new people and, just get our music out there to more people that want to hear it. That's what it's all about for us.
But did you guys gig before COVID happened?
Yeah. Yep. We were gigging before COVID happened. Absolutely. We actually, right when COVID hit, it was around St. Patrick's Day. And we were set to have our busiest months ever. Like we were really built all new rooms. We were getting more into some cool rooms in Boston and Somerville and surrounding towns. and you know, building up regionally a little bit, getting down to Rhode Island. We had some cool things lined up, and it all, of course, you know, got shut down. But we were about to be really busy gigging. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that'll happen again, you know, as things start to come back to normal a little bit. But you know, the silver lining is it got us in the studio and it got us making music, and so total silver lining.
Yeah. There are always a silver lining.
I think there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually many artists have said that, as they were so busy doing tours and gigs and that it sort of forced them for lack of a better word, sit still and create.
I think there's going to be some amazing music that comes out of this from so many people that have, you know, so many musicians that have done just that, or, you know, even bands that, you know, did some cover shows to make some money while they're writing originals. And then for last year, they haven't really had to focus on practicing and learning originals. They've been on covers. They've been working on originals. And I think there's going to be an explosion of some pretty amazing music.
Agree with you, Mark. I believe there's going to be an explosion of music. I know myself as a fan, I'm dying to see a live gig, and people that I know in my small circle, they're all dying to go to a live show. I think it could be like the 1920s, the roaring 20s again, where people just said, I've had enough. I'm going to see people. I want to hear live music. And I think the beneficiary will be the indie bands, local gigs, local venues, festivals.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think people, because, you know, sometimes people value something more so when it's taken away from them.
For sure.
And so, you know, they're not going to save up their dollars for a $400 ticket to see a legacy band.
Yeah.
Not to put any negative on it, but I think people are going to be more apt to support their friends or local bands, local festivals, because bottom line is I think people miss it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So
I hope so too. That'd be awesome.
Well, that's where my money's going. So
that's
awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, so awesome. I just wanted, before we go, I just want to talk about, you guys have a merch section on your site.
We do. We
totally can you talk a bit about your merch?
I can totally talk about it, but I'm going to defer to Mark, because Mark is like the merch man extraordinaire. Not just merch, like, you know, obviously Mark brings so much musically to the band, but Mark is like an incredible, he's the art director as well, for sure. He's an incredible graphic designer and like artist in his own right. And he's designed all our logo stuff, our shirts, our everything, right? And, you know, even all our album artwork, that's all our album artwork is Mark.
Really?
Yep.
That's awesome, because I looked on your merch page and I'm like, I like it. So you did it all. You did it, Mark. That's great.
Yes, I went to Mass College of Art in Boston for industrial design, actually. But I'm a working designer. My day job is I'm a shoe designer, actually. But okay. I love creating all the time. So this is a whole different medium for me, and I love the band gives me so much to draw from. Every time this new song comes out, I get excited to create like whatever the graphic is we're going to use for the album art. So it's a really fun process, and these guys are really supportive of that. And creating the merch has been fun too. I like taking the logo, the base logo, and mixing it up and trying to come up with something that matches what we're working on at the time. So, and involve it. It's fun.
Well, you did very well. I would encourage everybody to jump on that merch page. Great tank top. I love it.
Yeah, the good stuff there.
Yeah, is it coming black?
Not yet. It could. That's actually a really good ad.
I love the black. I love the black.
We'll be sure to send you one.
I buy it.
No way.
Honestly, I buy merch for indie bands all the time. Actually, on my studio table right now, I have two vinyl LPs and a T-shirt that I bought. Now, I believe in supporting indie, so I would love to have one. But let me know when you have it, and I'll purchase one.
Cool. That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So where is the best place to download, buy your music, follow you? I'm sure you're active on one channel a bit more than others.
Yeah. So the best place to find us in like sort of one-stop shop is our website, which is thefreightband.com. And you from there, you can get anywhere. We have our links to our social media, to, you know, our YouTube, our Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is where I'm trying to be most active. And I definitely follow that up with Facebook and try to get to YouTube as much as I can, too. But it's proven a little, you know, YouTube content, I'm trying to be a little more selective with. But I'm working on that. And but yeah, you can find us. Our website will get you to any of those.
And there's a link on the website to all the streaming and yes. iTunes to Spotify.
iTunes and Spotify, wherever you listen, Amazon, anywhere we're out there, you can find us anywhere on all the streaming platforms.
Yeah, it's on your website. Well, thank you very much for coming on board. I really had a great time talking to you three.
Yeah, Shay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love the music that you're creating together as a band, and keep doing it because you're really creating a very strong niche for yourself in the music area, whether it's blues or rock. Where do you think you're going to go? Blues or rock? Are you going to say bluesy rock or?
You know, rock and roll. I think we're keeping it in that umbrella, you know, we're not discriminating against any kind of rock. We just want to be in it. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, keep doing it. Thank you very much for coming on board.
Thank you, Shay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was great. Well, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please share this episode with others and post about it on social media. To catch all the latest from The Buzzer and upcoming shows, you can follow us on Instagram at The Buzzroll Media and on Twitter at The Buzzer Indie. Catch you at the pod next episode, On Air Indie, from iPad to yours over the airways. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.